This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Another edition of Amusement Warehouse podcast, I should say. Today we have with us Tony Sanders, who's the general manager of the Old Tucson Amusement Park, Old Tucson Entertainment, I guess your formal name is.
Formal.
He'll answer anything. Tony, welcome and thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
No, thanks, Ron. I appreciate to be on. It's exciting. I love to be a part of industry podcast and this side of the business. So yeah, love to be here. So
yeah, it's been a great success since we launched. We said, this would be really neat, but I had no idea. I just went, when I went to the amusement park convention back in November, I was just shocked by how many people were listening. It was crazy. It's really pretty cool.
There's nothing, there's a few out there, but there's nothing like this. And I love to see it. I'm a amusement nut my whole life. So yeah.
When you say there's nothing like this, how are we different?
I feel like you're covering it from an operator's perspective.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't see that too often. I mean, there's a lot of leadership development and guest service development, but really an operator's perspective is not seen that much.
So. And then you get the fan side where people go, oh yeah, that's really neat. even our writer on our magazine, whether it's online or print, sometimes if I get a new writer, I got to stop them. I got to say, we're an industry magazine. We're coming from an industry standpoint. So everybody knows what, this ride is, or that, that the places have food or whatever, and the funnel cakes are popular and, stuff like that. So sometimes I got to dial it back and say, you got to tell us what's different. What are they doing that's interesting or can be interesting to other people? So,
That's a
constant thought, because we cover the business of amusement industry. So
yeah,
that's really cool. So this Old Tucson Park is really a neat place. It's different though than a traditional amusement park in so many ways. Can you tell us, sort of the start about the history of the park and how it got started and what was the idea behind it?
Sure. The park really started as a movie set for the movie Arizona. It was built to just be a one-time use movie set. Once they finished the movie, they were done. So Columbia Pictures was just going to be out. They were done. And, the community decided, let's keep it going. So, it was kind of brought back into the fold. It was saved by several organizations, here in the Tucson area several times. And then, in the 50s, a gentleman named Bob Shelton, created what we know as the modern Old Tucson, with a movie studio aspect and an amusement park aspect. So
he had more of a vision for it, what it was going to look like, as far as were the other organizations like nonprofits trying to just preserve.
Yeah. Mostly to preserve it. Preserve the space, preserve the history, which this park is just rich in history. And so I think that was a noble effort, but then, Bob just said, I think we could do a little bit more and bring in the tourist trade. I mean, you're talking the 50s, 60s, the early part of the, I would say the boom of the start of the amusement industry as we know it, or as we see it this way on the park side.
Very true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
The parks were kind of late bloomers in a way. There are parks and those trolley parks and things like that, but really they started taking off about when you're saying, so that's interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing. The the history of this park is just so weird in that it was a movie studio for a large part of its life, and probably filmed, I think we filmed over 500 different films here over the years. So
like the go-to place for Westerns.
Yeah. If you needed a place where you needed a vista mountain in the background and you needed that old saloon, this was the place. Yeah. So
it's pretty neat. So when the guy took over, what did the park consist of?
It consisted of a couple of different streets or sets, you could say. So this was this town, or this one was this town. Essentially, you wanted the films wanted to be able to ride out of one town, right? And then film riding into another. So there was multiple sets. It eventually added a sound stage to the park. A lot of filming was done on the sound stage. And then there was elements where guests could mingle throughout the day and take tours and see things as the early stages of the park. So
the draw was just to see like tours and things like that. That was
tours. What movies? You might be here when the movie was being filmed. Back in the day, they didn't have as much secrecy or hush hush around movies being filmed, where now it's a lot different. So,
gotcha. So it operated that way for how long?
Until sometime in the 70s, 80s, it started to really go more amusement too. More rides were added. We had different aspects, play structures, games, restaurants. I mean, a lot of stuff was added over the years and just kind of folded into it. But really the peak was probably 80s, 90s, where you saw the most amusements, the most activities as an amusement park alongside the movie studio.
And it was still under the same ownership at that point?
Yeah. And then in the sometime, I believe in the late 90s, the ownership changed from Mr. Bob Shelton to a company that was here in the region, the area for Tucson. So, yeah.
And what was their intent when they bought it?
I think they just were huge into attractions in the area. They were a development company in the area. They owned a lot of properties and they really were invested in the Tucson region, Phoenix region. So they were really invested in what the area had in it. I believe they even had a stake in the Diamondbacks, the Arizona Diamondbacks. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
And they owned it until the pandemic or?
Yeah, until 2020. 2020, they just that operation ended. So the land that the park is on is actually owned by Pima County. So the county owns the land. And the business is lease operated from the county.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
So the Pima County is your landlord.
Yeah. We have the county as our landlord. So, but we have a great relationship with them and they understand. And I think that they look to the operators really to make major decisions about operations at the parks, at the park here. They're not an operator per se. They're just the land holder. So
you don't have to run big decisions by them or
no. I mean, if there's some major structural changes maybe, you know, we want to actually try to bring in something big like a water play structure or something a little bit more that's going to cause more construction or more activity on the property. They're always involved when it comes to land, changing the land and moving and maybe some structure changes because technically they own the structures. So.
Gotcha. And you're like right next to it, like a state park, right? Or something big.
Correct. We're actually wedged. We're right next to the Tucson Mountain State Park. And then we're wedged in between the Saguaro National Park. So we're in this absolutely beautiful valley, I would say, this space surrounded by saguaros everywhere. Just the desert life is here. And you see it in all the movies that were filmed here. they wanted that perspective, that view when shooting their films. And it's absolutely a beautiful place.
So the pandemic kind of put the other owners, they closed, right? The pandemic.
Correct. And correct. Yeah.
That kind of put them out of the park business there for a while. And then the park was bought again in 2022, or a new lease operated, I guess, is the proper term.
Correct.
And that company, and what's their vision?
So the company that I work for that currently operates this park is called American Heritage Railways. And if you heard the name American Heritage, you probably wouldn't know what that is. There's a lot of parts of American Heritage that people might recognize. The Durango Silverton train line, the tourist train line out of Durango, Colorado, is ran by American Heritage. They also recently acquired the Branson Scenic Railway. They also run the Great Smoky Mountain Railway. So their focus is tourist attractions like those that are rail based. And then the company has several other offshoots or businesses within the company. One of them being a hotel in the Silverton area, a very classic historic hotel. They own a ranch called the Tucson Ranch, which is not far from Durango. Then they also own a company or two companies called Rail Event Productions and Rail Events Incorporated. And you might say, well, what is that? Well, if anyone has ever, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I said, I did say that. What is that?
Oh, okay. if anyone's ever taken one of the journeys for the Polar Express events held around the country, that's the Rail Events side of the company. So Rail Events Productions actually runs and produces several events throughout the U.S. or actually around the world. And then Rail Events Incorporated is the licensing company. So our company works directly with Warner Brothers to license out this Polar Express experience. So, which is a very popular experience. People love it. It's not waned in its popularity in 20 something years. So it's very exciting portion or side of the business that we have. So
that's interesting. So this company really, they sound well suited for this park because they feature historical attractions, I guess, in a way.
Correct.
It's probably not an easy, there's probably not a whole lot of people have experience with that specifically because it is unusual the way it's operated and run. So
our vision, I think American Heritage's vision, the way we look at it is that we look at three or four things. We look at the entertainment side, the education, the history, and the heritage of properties. And what is it that we can do to continue that? I mean, American Heritage jumped, straight into this project saying, we believe this site, we believe in the history and the experience that the guests have here, and we want to make sure we continue that. So I would say that what a big announcement, though, is for the company, which we just recently announced through the Rail Event side, is that we are now partnered with Warner Brothers to now bring Harry Potter experiences to trains around the world. So not only will we be doing the Polar Express, we are now a Harry Potter experience operation as well. So
that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Now, I won't have those here. I won't have those here at Old Tucson. We only have a C.P. Huntington style train here. So,
your involvement, you came in just after they bought it, basically?
About a year in, I came in and took over as GM here.
And what's your background, and how did you you look at this opportunity to come here and work on the Old Tucson?
Well, my background is, makes 33 years this year that I've been working in the amusement park business. I started at the age of 15, working at Six Flags Over Georgia. I lived about 5 minutes from there, and I used to go every summer. My mom would buy me a season pass, and then she had come home for lunch and then drop me off at the park, and I'd spend all day in the park having fun. And then she'd pick me up on her way back from work.
And, save on babysitter.
Yeah, essentially. And then one day she took me down and I thought we were going to get my season pass for the summer. I just, you know, turned 15 and no, it was time for me to go get a job. So she took me to the employment office instead of the season pass sales office and pretty much forced me to go get a job. And I just fell in love with this business. I mean, I probably say within a few years, I said, well, this is what I'd love to do. I don't know what inside the business I want to do, but I was hooked. So
what did you start doing at that part?
My first job was called a patio crew. And I literally walked from patio to patio at the different food stands, cleaning tables. I had probably the best job for a young kid to start by just cleaning and then being able to walk around the park all day long, just going from patio to patio. I eventually fell into the game side, became a game operator, then some rides, and then kind of worked my way up through different positions. But yeah, over the years, I think I spent about 11 years with Six Flags. So
yeah. 11 years. Wow.
Yeah. So I had fun. I can tell you, you know, my existence was Six Flags because not only did I meet friends there, but because my high school was so close, everyone who went to my high school worked at Six Flags as well. So it really was a fun, you know, growth youth thing for me. I loved it. So.
And by, so your 11 years, you would, this is going to become your vocation.
Yeah. I decided this is what I want to do. I didn't know where or exactly what position. I had, at one time, I fancied myself a ride mechanic, but I quickly understood that I am not mechanically inclined to work on rides.
Make a good fit.
Probably not for me. And then I really wanted to jump into the world of a design, and I looked at being a sign shop foreman and working in a sign shop. But where I think I found my niche was leadership, or at least the side of leadership. I started out in a human resources capacity mostly. I worked my way up full-time roles in human resources. I was in charge of training, recruitment, development for the entire Six Flags Atlanta properties at one time. So and really found my
Six Flags.
I worked for several different parks over the years, several different companies. I worked for Premier Parks, which was, you know, at one time Six Flags as well, but in a different capacity. I worked for Palace Entertainment up at Water Country. I was operations manager there. I worked for Frontier City in Oklahoma City.
Water Country where?
Water Country in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I love that place. it was a great place. It's funny because I would say, oh, I work at a water park in New Hampshire. And people go, there's water parks? Yeah, for a short time of year. Yeah, yeah. We were packed. That was a busy, busy park.
So, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Great season.
Yeah. We essentially ran from June 1st to Labor Day, full operation. And then we were done. It was over for the rest of the year. So it was great. But that water was nice and cold at the beginning of it.
I'll bet.
Yeah. So my first day there, I remember this. My first day there, I was the operations manager, but I had never been lifeguard certified. So the first thing my boss said is you need to learn and be trained as a lifeguard. Day one, I walk in, 5 minutes I'm in the door. They're like, okay, put the swimsuit on. You need to go out there and jump in the pool and get your certification for lifeguard. It was freezing cold water. I could not believe it. So I didn't even get to put my stuff in an office. It was just go get in the water and be certified. So,
that's but crazy.
Eventually I ended up working for, Merlin Entertainments, ran, as an operations manager, one of their Legoland Discovery Centers and Sea Life Aquariums in Kansas City. And then I ended up working for probably one of my favorite parks, which is the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. So,
oh, wow. That's
yeah. I was the games, arcades, and attractions manager there, and probably just one of my favorite jobs of all time. You cannot beat the games side of the business for me. It's such a wonderful thing. And being a part of a park that really, truly invests in the games and arcades operations. Yeah.
A lot of parks, the games are like an afterthought. You know, they're just kind of there.
No, yeah, we truly did. I think when I started, we had 38 Midway games.
Did you really?
Yeah. Group games everything. Race games, everything. It was just packed full. And then we had over 500 arcade machines throughout that park. So it was a significant amount of amusement business. And that park still is you know, one of the top operators when it comes to that in my mind. They really invest. They really allowed me to invest in that as well. Yeah.
So. Yeah, it could be a good source of revenue if it's run right. Oh, but
yeah, absolutely. I was still the lowest revenue department, but man, that revenue was huge.
So. But a lot of those big parks, it just, like I said, it's an afterthought almost.
I think today a lot of them look to companies like HB Leisure to take those costs off their books, you know, because there is a cost to operating games, you know, so.
And but, so is that from where you went to old Tucson?
Eventually I ended up back in Alabama. I was working for Alabama Adventure. And then my position was kind of eliminated there. So I was looking and I was like, where am I going to go? And I said, oh, this job in the desert. I'll never live in the desert. That's okay. I'm not. But here I am. This is where I ended up. So I'm excited to be here. This park, you asked me, you know, what does it mean to me, or how do I feel about it? And honestly, I feel like there's a huge responsibility for me and my team just to make sure that this property is successful and moves forward in the right direction. We are holding history in our hands, major history within the amusement world, but also kind of the Western movie world here. It's important for us. And I think I really see it as a wonderful challenge. But also an honor to do so. Yeah.
When you saw it, though, were you a little bit taken aback because it's not a traditional amusement park like the one you worked at? So did that give you some misgivings about it or second
thoughts? A little bit. I wouldn't say misgivings. I was just in my head, I immediately was like, how do I make a property look beautiful that isn't supposed to look beautiful? There's no concrete and there's no.
I'd have been like, how do I make money with this thing?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. First few days, there's no concrete or asphalt in the park. So we are traditional. Like you walk in and it is like walking into the Old West. So my mind immediately goes to what's the kind of attractions, what's the kind of experiences. Honestly, what we are and what we kind of phrase ourselves now is that we're a Wild West entertainment park. The majority of your experience here right now is entertainment. Live shows that consist of musical shows, stunt shows, gunfights. We have a shootout in the street every day. You know, these are the types of things you're going to get when you come in. So we focus on that entertainment aspect. Which is different. A lot of parks have removed that entertainment aspect. And we are less of a ride park. Now we're adding some rides. We have plans. We're looking at more things to come into the park so we can increase that amusement ride aspect of it. But currently we are truly an entertainment park. And I would say we're also kind of an experience park. Because some of the things you're going to do here are experiences. They're not just live shows. Some of these things you're involved in. You're a part of that show, if you will, or part of that experience here. So we're a multifaceted park. And I think we have to be. Because the way you just said it is true. Is how do I make money, or how do I bring to life, this park. And it can't just be, we're not just a ride park and we're not just an entertainment park. So how do we blend that so well?
How many shows do you have at the park? Like, and how often do they go on? And
So on a daily basis, like we just finished up this year's final show schedule. We are at 8 live shows throughout the day during our operation. Some of those run 3 times a day, some run 2. But we have essentially 8 live shows and shows, I should say, throughout the day. And then we have multiple experiences. Where
how long do the shows last about?
They vary between 15, 20 minutes. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, we'll have a musical can-can show. So we have in our Grand Palace Saloon a can-can show. We have a magic show that's a Wild West magic. People love it. We have stunt shows where there's live actors who are stunt performers who fall off buildings and get shot and beat each other up. So, and then we do some streetmosphere shows. And then we do a very popular one for us is the actual stunt demo show, where we show people how our stunt performers learn and how the techniques are to be a stunt performer and what they do. And we actually bring some people up and they punch out our stunt performers and like do some shooting and all kinds of stuff. So it's
off the building.
Yeah. Well, not just yet. Just yet. And you know, there's an explosion or two somewhere in there. So, you know, it's a really unique experience. But then we have what we say is the experiences side, which is we have a thing called saloon history and Pharaoh lessons. And we'll actually take guests into an old saloon. We'll talk about the saloon history, point out different things inside the saloon, and then we'll sit them down at tables and we're teaching them how to play Pharaoh. You know, you don't find that too often because Pharaoh was a game in the West and we want people to truly experience that. We also have our great blacksmith shop who's out there pounding out, you know, metal and different objects that you can actually buy in the gift shop. So it's a unique experiences based thing. And then we have our attractions. We have our rides. We have a C.P. Huntington train. We have a carousel from Chance. We have
from Chance or is it a Philadelphia Toboggan Company?
It's a Chance.
I read online it was a PTC 1908.
Maybe
you got Chance scenery on it.
See, we had Chance on it, and we're using Chance to we had to replace the canvas. So in my head, I'm just thinking Chance, but you're right.
It is a Philadelphia Toboggan Company.
Yes, yeah, you're right. I was in my head.
There's not a whole lot of those out there.
it's a classic. And we just bought from another property an SBF Pony Adventure. So we're going to be able to put kids on the little horses and send them around the track.
Oh, SBF?
Yeah, yeah.
Who sold that to you if I don't know?
Live Oak in California.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Live Oak Pumpkin Patch. I can't think of his name, but...
Oh, you bought it privately. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, we bought it privately. So we also just bought a Hampton ride that we're going to add in for kids. And we have some other plans. We're bringing back our antique car ride. The park used to have an antique car ride. So we're going to bring back those in a little bit different capacity. And then we have a petting zoo. We have mini golf in the park.
I'll say the petting zoo, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, and it's unique in that we also have 2 cows, like full-sized cows on property that live here year-round. And people love to just see the cows, and we walk them throughout the park, and they get to pet them and zoo them. And so it's a unique experience in that aspect.
Who takes care of the petting zoo for you? Is that in-house?
Yeah, actually, our ride and attractions supervisor. She actually owns a farm, a ranch. So
you got to find the right person to do that.
Yeah, no, she's great, and it's a great experience because, you know, I don't think any other rides and attraction supervisors out there have too many animals in their repertoire. That's
usually a pretty specialized thing.
And I was fortunate. I was, when I first got here, I said, oh, I think we should really bring back the games. So I was able to bring in four games. I bought them from Redbone, brought in four games for this season, and oh, they did great. And I was happy to have games back in the park. So
was there reluctance to have those because of the, that's the historical thing or?
No, I mean, we have a section of the park that's really geared towards kids and families, and we're not too concerned about that section matching up to history, to being the visual spot from, they don't really shoot movies over there. So it's left to our devices to kind of be the amusement section or area of the park. The rest of the park, we are very cautious about, you know, putting in some kind of attraction or ride that doesn't match. And we try to keep the rest of the park in par with the Old West. So
what years is the park supposed to depict?
Generally in the 1800s.
Okay.
Is what you're looking at. Obviously, you know, antique cars or different things, you're going to move the years up here or there, but we, again, that amusement section is just not the section that we care about as much for the history. So generally you're talking somewhere in the 1800s.
So. Yeah, but you might have a Ferris wheel and a merry-go-round.
You could, you know, we don't, we could though. We have the CP Huntington train. The park used to have an actual large size narrow gauge train that was featured probably in multiple movies, but prominently in Tombstone, the movie Tombstone. So we used to have that model here, but when the old operators ended their operation, that train was sold off to a museum. But that's the beauty of our parent company, American Heritage, is we're a railroad company. So we are actually in the process of looking to bring back a full-size train to the park. So it won't be on a track looping the park. It'll be more of a movie a set opportunity and a place for guests to take pictures and see it. So
the station.
Yeah, the station set up. We're going to look at building a new station for it and everything. So,
the games, what kind of prizes do you give away?
All your traditional plush. I mean,
you do? Okay.
Yeah. We didn't do anything Old West or Old World at this point. We were like, we want to balance with making sure we make some money the first year of operation for the games. I do have some fun ideas, but. Looked to my friend Gary over at Fiesta, and he provided me with some great items for the year. So,
okay. And what is an extra cost? Like, is the petting zoo included? Is all that included with your admission?
So we the first 2 years the park said let's try the model of one park admission, but what we decided to do this year is we're moving to that kind of pay-to-play admission. We're going to have a lower entry admission. We're not going to be free like Knoebels or something like that, where you know you can walk around, you can see some of the entertainment there for free. We are going to have a general admission price that gets you in, and then if you want to ride the rides, and we have a horse-drawn stagecoach that you can participate in, or if you want to do the mini golf, or we can also do a petting zoo feeding cup. You can buy a bundle of tickets, or if you won't, you can buy up front just a all-inclusive ticket. So kind of like a general admission for everything, but it's just priced and structured differently. I mean, the funny thing here is our demo during the spring is mostly much older folks. It is not we're not a teenage amusement park right now. We're trying to look at the rides and the attractions that can go in, but our demo is much different. So for us, having a little bit lower price for some of those age groups is important. And we want to offer that so they can just come in, experience the shows, maybe go buy some lunch or retail or something. But their opportunity to come in is at a lower cost. So
it's more grandparents and grandkids rather than mom and
dad. Yeah, I mean, parents, and the regional parents are the ones who are traveling. We get a lot of tourists in the area here. So they'll pop in, they'll come experience the park. But the regional, what we're seeing during the spring is a much older demo. Yeah, absolutely. Now, we also do other events throughout the year, and those focus on kind of different demos for those as well. So,
different places. I saw that. So you have now more seasonal, like Halloween activities, and yet I saw that was like a emphasis when it reopened, where you're going to try and do these different seasonal based type events.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, as any park, you know, you have new operations. We said we can't just open and operate 300 days a year, even in our climate that could support that somewhat. We don't operate at all full park operations in the summer. We're in a fully outside, pretty much a park. I mean, we have some buildings and stuff that you go into, but we're outside. And in the summer, it is just too hot in the region. So we don't particularly operate full operation. Now, we do provide daily tours, movie and historical tours during the summer. We also introduced last year ghost tours, which are a big thing for this property because this property has such a rich history and has some weird experiences that you can't experience in the park late at night. So those kind of run during the summer. We also we try to push movie activity or movie production, TV production. We try to push that to the summer as well because we're not operating the amusement park side of it as much. That helps us there. But then in the fall, we go to evening operations and we focus on an event called Nightfall, which is your Halloween based event, you know, four or five haunted houses, scare zones, shows. We add in the element of shows, though. We don't lose those when it comes to that. We really ramp up our shows actually for Halloween. So you come during Halloween, you're going to get a full production of shows, haunted houses, scare zones, Streetmosphere, special experiences. And that operates at night, which now shifts our demo to a much more teen, young adult base. So now our marketing has to completely shift from one side to the other, and the tourist side goes down. So we still get some, but mostly locals at that point. So,
but the park's open during the day, and then it transforms into a?
Not right now. We are not open during the day. We do tours. We do the historical tours 363 days a year, no matter what. And those happen during the day. So when we're open at night for Nightfall, we actually do the historical tours during the day. We're just not there as a park that we feel the operations warrant us to be open all day. We're working to get there, but right now we're not. We actually are looking at doing some fun kids-based Halloween daytime in 2025 this year. So we'll see how that works out for us. So
that's pretty neat. So you've done a ton of movies there. What are some of the movies that have been filmed there? What's interesting about the park? And
well, there's basically, if you've seen a John Wayne film or you've seen maybe a few Clint Eastwood films, I think some that stick out for me, at least growing up, the movies I watched, Tombstone is one of my favorite Western films. It was filmed here. Three Amigos was filmed here. I love the Three Amigos that was filmed here. Surprisingly, Cannonball Run 2 was filmed here. Yeah. So it's not all Western films. There's some other, you know, different ones that we have. McClintock is a classic here, a John Wayne classic. We actually still have the building McClintock's. The general store is still there. We actually turned it into a fun little small theater that we do great things in. But some other ones are just all the classic Westerns. But then we do TV shows and commercials and all kinds of different ones. And I'll say, last year, we even had the Jersey Shore on here. So they came out, they did their family vacation tour show, and they came out, and they even picked us to do a gender reveal for one of the stars of the show. So they're having their baby, and they wanted to do the gender reveal, and we blew up some confetti out of one of our cannons and confetti on the ground for days and days. So, but yeah, I mean, we film everything. I mean, we actually love to help and cater to student films and young entrepreneurs trying to make a name for themselves. So we're always willing to help where we can. And then the school here, the University of Arizona, has a film program. And we try to help those students as much as we can as well. So
is that a big source of revenue for the park too, the films and the filming and the?
It depends. It's not major, but if we were to get a major production, and let's say that production is going to last, you know, 3 or 4 months, then that's big dollars. Yeah. Yeah. But most of them are not major costs. We're not a film company or a film studio. We're a film location. So we never make the films ourselves. We don't produce, we don't direct, you know, we provide the facility. We provide the Western facades and the buildings. We also can provide catering to movie companies. We have a huge wardrobe department that has a lot of authentic wardrobe. We have props department, and we have the facilities to do all those things. So anywhere in Arizona, this is going to be, if someone wants to film a Western, this is definitely their best location. And obviously, we're very well priced. We're not overpriced when it comes to that production side. So,
is that one of your responsibilities to find people to shoot there?
It's part of my job, but it's also part of our entertainment manager has a dual responsibility as well. So I do feel sorry for him. He's got to run all the entertainment production for the year, but he also has a tie-in. Him and our entertainment supervisor work hand in hand to tour those interested parties. We also work closely with Film Tucson here in the region, and they're very helpful in bringing in potential films or activities filming for us. But we get inquiries from all over the world. Spanish filmmakers, German filmmakers. I mean, whatever the case is, we get a lot of Hollywood who's coming out and looking. The film industry, the Western side is just different right now. I think everything's more Western adjacent, almost like your Yellowstones and your you know, those types of films or TV shows. So, but we do have some. We had several productions the last couple of years. So. We've seen a few, not major films, but we've had some. So
that's pretty neat. I mean, it's must be neat seeing them being filmed and things like that. Is kind of a
fun. I wasn't here for a couple of them, but I got to see some. And I wasn't here for the Jersey Shore, but we actually taught those guys how to fight, and there was a whole fight scene where they're breaking bottles and all kinds of,
you know. Now, was the park open during the filming of that? Could people come and watch?
It depends. Now, if they come if they're doing a tour, the park is typically not open in full operation. If there's a movie production, we do have kind of a groups and private events area, and we have an old set from the TV show High Chaparral that's kind of separated from the main part of the park. So there might be production up there when the park is fully open, but typically the park's not fully open. But if guests come during, like on a tour, they're doing the historical or movie tours, they can actually see that production. Now they have to see it from a distance because the movie companies or whoever's shooting may not want us to be close by. And there's a lot of, you know, filming and things that happen where the guests can't see it. They're very hush-hush about it. But we try to make that as a part of it. We'll actually change the tour routes to accommodate those filming opportunities. So,
pretty neat.
But the other part of this business is the other thing really is we're a in addition to the amusement park and movie studio, we're a private events facility. So if you have a, you know, a group of 500 wants to come and do, you know, a dinner and celebration and, you know, maybe an awards for their company, we're going to accommodate that. We have the space. We actually had a recent private event where we had all the tables were out in our town square. We had lights hung up. We had DJs and dance floors. And it's such a beautiful place to have a private event. So it really works well here for a private event facility as well. So
you're working on building that aspect of the park?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, yeah, this park has been around forever, right? I mean, but when we started, we were like a startup. We had no previous group sales contact information. We had, you know, no direct line to vendors for this or this. We literally started from the ground up again when the park took over, or the American Heritage took over in 2022. So,
you know, it's curious. You talked about your tie-ins with Harry Potter and with you know, Polar Express, right? And that, but you've got a natural tie-in with some of the movies you've done before. Has there been any exploration about, you know, having special events built around some of the movies that were done there? Maybe you find a director or, you know, star or whatever.
Yeah, we're actually looking at that as a part of the process of how we can added value to our operational days, you know, really have that special event or special event operation going on. We're also looking at doing different things. The park used to host Wild West Con all the time, and the steampunk convention that always is in Tucson. We're looking at all those again. But yeah, from a movie standpoint, we want to do that. We have that direct tie with Warner Brothers, but that's through our parent company, through American Heritage.
Yeah.
So we can try to use that, you know, and work with any Warner Brothers films, productions in the future as well that were shot here. Yeah. So.
Yeah, maybe build some set pieces around it, or the more famous films you've done there would be interesting to look at, you know, to.
I did the Warner.
Here's where John Wayne stood when he shot this guy or did something else. And
well, we do that as a part of our daily movie and historical tours. There's a lot of in-depth information where we take our guests and we show them this spot. You know, the crazy part was in the early 90s, there was a major fire here on property. And it burnt down some of the sets. So a lot of those original pieces are not here. We have some still, but a lot of the filming was done on that second set and in the soundstage, which unfortunately those areas didn't make it through the fire. So, but we still have enough that we can dive into the history. We have big plaques and pictures and different things when guests go. We're also going to be updating our tour to include kind of a video presentation at the beginning. I was fortunate to do the Warner Brothers backlot tour recently and loved it. And I said, you know, that's we need to stylize ourselves a little bit like that, where there's a beginning series so you can see everything that happened and what was shot.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So
I think that'd be pretty cool, especially like you said, all the history that's there and all the movies you've shot and all the famous actors that have been there and everything else.
It's truly amazing. And the great part about this is I really get this team to introduce this team to the amusement world like this. I mean, a lot of our employees are new kind of to the industry. And it's been so exciting to say, here we have this park with all this history. Here I am, this old man who's been around in the industry for a while. And then here's a bunch of young green folks in the industry who are just passionate about what they're doing, and to combine all this into one, it's just kind of a crazy experience sometimes. So
it's definitely different. You know, another thing I saw that looked really good was your food offerings. What do you serve there, and what's different? But it looked delicious. At least they had good pictures.
Yeah, we are probably a little different than your traditional amusement food. Our biggest thing is barbecue here, and we smoke brisket and pork for hours and hours to be served at our Big Jake's restaurant. And that can be accompanied by, you know, sides that we have, but it's a focus on that long smoked meat and that barbecue experience that we have. And people love it. They come here, and some people get a season pass just to come eat dinner sometimes and, really? And have that. Yeah. Oh, it's always a loved item on the menu. And then we mix it up, you know, we throw some burgers in there or something. And then we did a cowboy dog, which is a take on the Sonoran dog. I don't know if you've ever had a Sonoran dog. I hadn't until I got here. It's literally a dog with beans and it's from the Sonoran region. And we did our own take on it with a cowboy dog. But we did add in a pizza location this year. We changed a restaurant last year, I should say, into a pizza location. But it's not just your traditional. We do brisket pizza. We do some other fun items. We have a giant cheese stick, things about this big. So we're delving more into some of the fried fun amusement side items. But our food is definitely a lot different. So
how many restaurants do you operate?
We actually only operate two right now. We had a third restaurant that was called Roses, which was much more of your Mexican fare. But we're actually transitioning Roses this year into Roses Sweet Shop. And we're going to combine all of our candy, our ice cream, churros, and even some spiked special adult sweet items in there. It's going to be really unique. It's going to be kind of your overall big sweet shop. And so we're going to transition that into that. We felt like our business during that time could be better focused on the sweet shop as a major. And then during our busier Halloween and Christmas time, we'll bring in something that is like a outdoor grill. That's an extra location that we put up. So.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
So the park is open how many days a year? As a park, like we're describing.
As a park, we're essentially open 130 days.
Maybe, okay.
As a full park operation, but we do operate 363 days. Something is happening on our park 363 days a year. So.
And then you have the special events, the nightfall or whatever else on some of the other nights.
Yeah, nightfall for Halloween. And then we have an event called Yuletide. It's Old Tucson's Christmas event. Started a couple of years ago the first time, and it's been really popular. It's a great family experience. You know, you get to see Santa. There's all kinds of shows. And apparently people loved hot cocoa, but they love it spiked, apparently, too. So,
do you serve alcohol?
We do. We are a fully licensed park, which can serve liquor, all kinds of mixed spirits and drinks. We actually are licensed, if we wanted to, would allow us to brew and bottle.
Really?
Yeah, we're not in the business yet, but it would allow us to do it. So
that could be pretty neat.
Yeah,
could definitely be pretty neat. So all those you call it Yuletide, you said?
Yuletide, yeah. It's
like a cowboy Christmas type thing, or?
Yeah, really. It's well, when you come to Yuletide, you're at the West Pole. The West Pole is the home of the Clauses in the western part of the U.S. It's where we actually make all the magical bells that fly Santa's sleigh. So, you come here, you get to meet Santa, you get to experience Santa. You also, we have a really cool experience with Mrs. Claus, story time with Mrs. Claus, where she tells some wonderful stories and all the kids walk away with a special gift. It's really some unique opportunities during Christmas. And this year we actually created a Christmas market, and we invited a lot of the local vendors to come out and be a part of the event. So we had over 10 to 15 vendors each night who were providing, you know, services or wares to the guest who came in too. So it's unique, it's so different. We go from Halloween and scare you to death to Christmas, and yeah, and we do it in a short time. I mean, we only have a few weeks in between the transition. And then our transition to spring right now, we open this Saturday. This will be our first day back to regular operation. And we just ended on January 4th for Christmas. So it's a very quick transition.
That's pretty neat. Go quickly. Is the pricing pretty much the same, or is it vary quite a bit between special events and regular park?
It'll vary a little bit for Halloween. We're looking at keeping the consistent one price point for Halloween to make it easier for our guests. We don't want to get into the business of charging for each haunted house or, you know, buy tickets for haunted houses. We kind of want to keep that similar. So we're looking at just the one ticket price for Halloween. Christmas will probably be very similar to that. I think it's the springtime that we look at, just because, like I said, the demo is so different. And there's a lot of guests in the spring who just, they don't want to ride a ride. They just want to come in, see the shows and eat and do those things and do the tours. So we decided to vary that just for the spring. So,
and what about, what does the season pass include? Just the regular operating days, or does it include special events, or?
It includes all the regular operating days. There'll be some deals for our season pass members that they're going to receive. You know, that's going to get them maybe the movie or history tour, the ghost tour at a discount, or those types of things. It does include all the regular operating days, and it is a full pass. So you get the rides, you get everything. You're not just paying to get in with that pass. You get the full experience as well. So.
But so you give them discounts for the Christmas and the
Halloween. Oh, no, they get in. Yes, sorry. Christmas and Halloween, yes, is included in that season pass. So the 130 days of full park operation is included with their season pass.
Plus the Christmas and the Halloween.
Well, that is, yes. So I should say, I'm sorry, we operate about 80-something days for spring, 20-something days, and then 20-something. Yeah, so that's where that adds up, sorry. The total year for full park operations is about 130 something days.
It's a lot of pieces to juggle and put together. So what's
yeah.
I know you have a focus on these special events. Is there more that you're thinking about for the park right now? What's your vision for moving forward?
Right now, our vision is to move forward with pretty much all of these things because we know that all of these together will bring us. What we want to do is slowly add more days to our spring operation. So right now we're about 80 something days in the spring. We would like to increase that some because we do get a big tourist base. So increasing our spring operation, really firming up and creating very, very good special events during the winter or fall time, but really focusing on that. Now, one of the things that we're going to do as well is we're going to focus on evenings in the summer and try to develop that business a little bit. A lot of people want something to do in the summer here, and they don't want to go out during the day, but they want to come out at night. So we started introducing the squirrel night markets in the summer, and those will be several that guests can come. They actually get in for free. They can pay to ride the rides or whatever, but they can get in for free, and we have vendors, we have food and drinks, and so we're going to focus on that a little bit. But really, we're just trying to enhance all the experiences that our guests can have. I'm in the process of looking at a few more rides, a few more attractions to add into the park and different experiences. So we want to build that base up first and really make that a very strong part of our operation. So
no nightly poker game in the saloon?
No, but you can learn Pharaoh if you come during the spring. I love poker, and maybe I'll just do that with my team. We'll just have our own nightly poker.
Yeah, it seems like and the ghost tours, those are just a certain period of time.
No, actually, ghost tours operate year-round.
Year-round, okay.
Yeah, so they can pick a day. We usually do two a week. What happens is guests come into the park. We turn off all the lights in the park. We give our guests lanterns, and they walk around with a guide, and they take them to some of the probably more spooky places I've experienced since I've been here. Things that you just can't explain. So
happen on the thing. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's right. You definitely have the most interesting park I've heard about in my experience.
That's why I want to come on here, Ron. I think people have forgotten what the Old West is, and they've lost touch with what a great experience is in the Old West. And I think people, if they come here, they're going to see that. And that's what we want to do. We want people to know. So
might even have a special event. It would be cool to have like an 1800s carnival, like bring in the banners and banner lines and put up the merry-go-round and do something, have a couple of.
I'm going to take your idea there. Ron. Shows. I love that idea.
That'd be fun to have. You put all the string lights up and make it like the carnival came to town for a few weeks.
If you can help me get a show here or one of the operators, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's pretty neat. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Tony. I really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll get out to two. I was just in Phoenix. How far is Phoenix from Tucson?
Oh, only about an hour and a half.
Oh, shoot. I should have came out. I was there for the
fair convention. You let me know. Let me know when you're out. We'll get you down.
I'll do it. Thank you so much for reaching out. Thanks for coming on, and best of luck to you in your endeavors.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate it.
Anytime you need some.
All right. Have a great day. Thanks.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing. Is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.